You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Like, naked is the theme. Like, people just love getting naked.
Last month, I had an in-depth conversation with Associate Professor at the University of Auckland's Faculty of Law, Carrie Leonetti, about the importance of expert-led domestic violence training for family court judges. This is the second part of that interview in which we spoke about some significant cases in the United States where mandatory training has been close to being passed as a law, only to be quashed by opposition. Carrie highlights why this opposition is apparent and why it is important to change. Here is that piece now.
There are definitely things we could do legislatively. I think intensive, meaningful training is part of what has to go on here. But I personally have doubts about whether even that is sufficient to reform the institution. And one of the things that I'm really concerned about has been the response to the training initiatives by courts around the world, because the sheer and utter resistance that we're now seeing to the training coming from judges all over the place has been, I think, particularly disappointing. So just to give you some examples, in early 2022, the Canadian Parliament introduced a law called Kira's Law. And I know this because it was all over the Canadian newspapers around like January or February of 2022. Kira's Law, in the horrible tradition of family violence legislation, was named posthumously after a little girl, Kira Kagan, who the evidence strongly suggests was killed by her father in his court-ordered care. The coronial inquest into the Kagan case is still ongoing in Canada, but the circumstances strongly suggest that she was killed by her father in a murder-suicide, despite her father's extensive history of domestic violence against her mother, which the Ontario Family Court just didn't see as relevant to the question of whether Kira ought to be in his unsupervised care. The Kagan case is particularly heart-wrenching because about 3 days before Kira was killed, Kira's mother actually went into the Ontario Family Court and made an emergency application asking to have the father's contact with Kira, unsupervised contact, suspended because he had made some really concerning, kind of threatening statements, and she was really worried about Kira's safety in his care. And instead of dealing with the motion urgently, the Ontario Family Court just adjourned the motion and referred the mother to social services, the clear implication being that they thought something was wrong with the mother because she was afraid for Kira, not that something was actually, you know, there was actually a sort of risk concern for Kira in her father's care. And so when Kira's Law was introduced, it would have mandated evidence-based family violence training for all of the Canadian family court judges. And it was introduced to this enormous amount of hoopla. I mean, the Canadians, understandably, were pretty shaken by Kira's murder because it does sort of feel like, my God, when are we going to learn this lesson and stop packing children off to the unsupervised care of domestic violence perpetrators? And then the legislation just died. There were no amendments. There were no second readings. It didn't go to a select committee. It just vanished. And at first, I didn't think much about that. I mean, legislation stalls sometimes. And I got distracted because around maybe February or March of 2022, the United States Congress passed a mandatory family violence training law called Kaden's Law. Kaden's Law, predictably at this point, was named posthumously after a little girl named Kaden Mancuso, who was murdered in the court-ordered care of her father after the Pennsylvania Family Court saw no relationship between the father's history of domestic violence against Kaden's mother and Kaden's safety in his care. Unfortunately, the United States Congress cannot mandate family violence training for family court judges in the United States because family court judges in the United States are state court judges, so only state legislatures can mandate their training. So what Kaden's Law did was it set aside tens of millions of dollars of federal grants. All states had to do was do a couple of safety measures in their family courts, including mandatory family violence training. That was the sort of big thing on the checklist for most states, and then they could get these millions of dollars of federal funding. So the federal government would not only pay for the training, but pay for all kinds of other like revisions and improvements to the family courts. So understandably, by the middle of 2022, a lot of state legislatures had introduced their state law counterparts to Kaden's Law. And then one by one in state legislatures around the United States, the family court judges killed them. They mounted a massive vocal opposition, actually not even a transparent opposition through normal legislative processes. in many cases, a whispering campaign in the hallways of state legislatures, basically telling legislators that they thought that mandatory family violence training was unconstitutional. For reasons I don't want to waste time on, you know, on the radio, I was a professor of constitutional law in the United States for 10 years. It's not unconstitutional. It's ridiculous. But they sort of invoked their power as judges to intimidate these legislators, a lot of whom either aren't legally trained or certainly aren't constitutional law experts. The law that I was sort of most familiar with was the California law, because I'm from California and I volunteer with a child abuse organization there. And the California law was called Peakey's Law. I feel like everybody can just play along at home now. Peakey's Law was named after Peakey Andrazian, a little boy who was murdered by his father in his court-ordered care after the California Family Court failed to see the relevance of his history of domestic violence against Peakey's mother to Peakey's safety in his father's care. So Peakey's Law would have mandated family violence training for family court judges in California. I then learned something about democracy in California I didn't know, because Peakey's Law passed the California Assembly on a, by definition, bipartisan, unanimous vote, 78-0. The California Assembly passed Peakey's Law, and then they didn't send it to the governor for his signature. So I didn't know you could kill a bill after it passed, but apparently you can. Because the California Judicial Council, which is a professional organization for judges in California, mounted this sort of bullying campaign in the state capitol in Sacramento. And so the California Assembly withdrew Peakey's Law, despite the fact it had passed 78-0. And that played out all over the country. Like, there was some amazing journalism in Colorado, where some investigative journalists did extensive research. I think they clearly had like a leak. They had a whistleblower, I think, because they had a lot of inside information about how the Colorado judges killed the Colorado counterpart to Kaden's Law. And it sort of all brings back like the really awful and interesting question here, which is, why are the judges so opposed to the training? I mean, that's what I just find really baffling in all of this. If I did a job where I was constantly subject to public criticism, and I was constantly getting criticism from experts and from child abuse organizations and from human rights organizations on the grounds that I didn't have an appropriate understanding to do my job. In fact, in 2019, we had a ministerial inquiry into the family court here in New Zealand that concluded, among other things, that the personnel of the family court, the judges, the lawyers for the child, and the court psychologist, lacked an evidence-based understanding of family violence. If I was subject to that kind of criticism, that I didn't have the tools I needed to do my job right, I would jump at the chance for like expert-led intensive training. And yet around the world, I mean, this has resulted in tens of millions of dollars just sitting in the United States Department of Justice, not drawn down upon by states, because in state after state after state, the judges quashed the training bills. I mean, so this like opposition, I mean, it's pretty clear internationally that family court judges have like planted their flag on this battlefield, and they will die here. They will die on the battlefield if you can't make us get expert-based training. And that opposition is, it's kind of baffling, really.
It is baffling. I mean, when you see the results of what happens when we aren't trained and when the system fails people.
Yeah, I mean, I can explain the resistance to you. I think anybody who has studied cognitive psychology at all can sort of explain the resistance to you. I could do it in fancy words like belief perseverance and cognitive dissonance and motivated reasoning. But what it really comes down to is this. For decades, family courts have engaged in practices that most experts think are really unsafe. And they have had all of these inquiries and they've had all of these inquests and they've had all of this news media coverage. And I think one of the things it's done is it's made them really defensive places. Like, a lot of the family court personnel just get deeply, deeply entrenched. I mean, and I get cornered a lot in some of these sort of like, you know, book release parties and things. And what I always get told by judges and lawyers is, you have it all wrong. You know, we're not that bad. We do know what we're doing. And so I think there's very much this bunker mentality in these family court cultures, where they've been subject to so much criticism for so long and they've flicked it away for so long that it's almost like, how can they possibly even implicitly now admit that maybe all along they haven't been doing this right? And, you know, I think part of it too is like, it's very easy. I think a lot of family violence advocates tend to vilify the personnel of the family court. I actually have a different take on them. I think they are mostly very nice people who very much want to do the right thing, and they honestly think they are doing the right thing by things by kids. They're just wrong. But the fact that they view themselves as, what is it you guys say in New Zealand, at the coal face? I think we say in the trenches in North America. View themselves as like at the coal face, dealing with this day to day. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time some family court judge retired and wrote a book about how heroic family court judges are, I mean, that's very much how they see themselves. And so if you are a family court judge who for 10 years has been ordering children into the care of domestic violence perpetrators, often over their own express objection and fear of the perpetrator, and if before that for 10 years you represented domestic violence perpetrators to help them get custody of kids, or you served as a lawyer for the child and recommended that kids go off to the care of violent parents, to suddenly today sit in a room and have to come to understand how dangerous and harmful those practices are. I mean, and so, yeah, there are kids all over New Zealand today who I worry are facing preventable harm because they weren't listened to, and their risk and the harm profile was not understood by the court who should be protecting them from that ongoing harm.
And that was Kerry Leonetti, Associate Professor at the University of Auckland Faculty of Law.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.